Dr. Nathan Bryan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Great to be with you.
I am so excited. I already was able to be on an interview with you on another show, and man, my little wheels were turning because this, I mean, what you're doing is so important.
Thank you. I think so.
I think so too. You know, one of the things I was thinking about, I went to good old Oral Roberts University, and they had this thing where they were like whole person education, and it was like body, soul, and spirit. You know, as believers, we should take care of all three. But one of the things I was thinking about is Christians a lot of times will focus on the health of our souls and the health spiritually, but we'll really neglect the health of our bodies. And It really can actually cause damage in the body of Christ, and people leave us sooner than they need to. So we really need to be stewarding our bodies.
We're a temple and we got to take care of it. I mean, we have to, you know, our health is our greatest asset. We can't enjoy the harvest and the fruits of our labor if we don't have good health.
And there really is an attack on our health in our world today.
And it's been going on for decades.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, certainly the way that the so-called experts guide us on nutrition and drug therapy and the food that we're producing and eating is, you know, not for the benefit of human health.
No. And I mean, I've been on my own personal health journey for years now. I think maybe 7 years. And, you know, I used to have a lot of fear, and I always try to tell people, you can't live your life out of fear. That will do more damage to your health. But one of the things I felt like the Lord showed me is He has designed our bodies in such an amazing way. And He has designed our bodies that they can heal. They can heal themselves. We just need to support the body
for sure
in that process.
Yeah, I think what I've learned in 25 years in academia and medicine is that people get sick for two reasons and two reasons only. Their body's missing something that it needs, or it's exposed to something that it doesn't need in form of a toxin. So if we can replete missing nutrients and we can rid the body of toxins or exposure to toxins, then the body heals itself. Doctors don't heal patients. Medicine doesn't heal patients. The human body heals itself. We just got to get out of the way, right? And for me, spending, you know, 30 years or more now in science and physiology and trying to understand how the human body works, you know, I think a lot of the discoveries I made early on were because, you know, I've made a conscious effort to have a conversation with our Creator.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how can we know how the body works if we don't have a relationship with the Creator?
And I think there's such wisdom in that. And I think that I want to talk a little bit about that, because whatever your belief is and whatever your worldview and your moral compass, that's going to affect your work. And so the people that we want in the field of science and medicine are people who have a relationship with God and understand that we are created and have a moral compass, because science applied the wrong way can do so much damage.
Yeah, I think we've lived through that, right?
Yeah, we've seen some of the fruits of that. So tell our audience a little bit of your story.
You know, I'm a small town Texas boy. I grew up in a very rural small community just outside of Austin. You know, came from a divorced home. My parents separated and divorced when I was young, 4 or 5 years old. And then, you know, when I was, I guess, 10, my dad suffered a very serious car accident, left him paralyzed from the waist down. And my brother and I were living with my dad at that time. And, you know, he was self-employed, so no insurance. Fortunately, he survived, but, you know, we've left him paralyzed from the waist down and unable to work. So, you know, at 10 and 11 years old, my brother and I had to go to work to pay the bills and, you know, support the family while Dad was in the hospital and rehab. And so we developed a strong sense of independence and, you know, this attitude of do whatever it takes. It's kind of next man up. And so, then I saw the medical system fail my dad, you know, just poor health, poor medical care, non-healing wounds, ulcers, uncontrolled diabetes, hypertension.
Oh, my goodness.
And so when I was in high school, my dad recovered and he went to work in a different city, and my brother and I didn't want to move. So we got our own apartment and finished high school. My brother graduated, and I spent the last 2 years of high school living in my own apartment and had two jobs working after high school and was pretty independent from the time I was 16 years old.
That is impressive.
But I was, you know, I was blessed with, you know, a gift. If I write something, I see something, I remember it. So I did very well in school. I made good grades and graduated the top of my class. And then I went to University of Texas at Austin. And as a small, naive country kid, all my counselors said, you should be an engineer. I'm like, okay, whatever. So I enrolled in engineering at UT. And then after the first semester, I go to my counselor and I go, what do engineers do? And they go, well, they build roads and bridges and mm-hmm. structures. And I go, well, that's not what I want to do. So I entered the biochemistry program in the College of Natural Science and pursued a degree in biochemistry.
What took you there?
You know, really just, again, I think my dad was my inspiration, trying to understand, you know, how the human body works. I took physiology courses and fell in love with this, the science and biology and biochemistry of human systems. And then once I had a degree in biochemistry, I thought I would, you know, achieve my goals and tried to find a job. There were no jobs. So I enrolled at LSU School of Medicine and got a PhD in molecular and cellular physiology, and that was when I was introduced to this whole science of nitric oxide.
So you studied, in layman's terms, basically how our cells work?
That's exactly right. I think, you know, I would advocate, if I could advocate and change anything, if you're going to go and be a physician, I think you have to have a strong background in biochemistry, right? Yeah. How do proteins and enzymes work to fuel the energy of the cell and of the body? Mm-hmm. And then physiology is kind of an all-encompassing field where it understands how does, you know, going from the subcellular organelle type model to cellular biology to organ systems to human physiology, how does all that integrate and how they tie into one another? Because I think once you have a firm understanding of that, then you can start to interrogate systems that fail when people get sick.
Oh, wow.
Right? And so not just treating, which is conventional medicine today, all we do is treat symptoms. You have a symptom, you take a drug for the symptom. But nobody's addressing, why did you get cancer? Why do you have heart disease? Why do you have erectile dysfunction? Why do you have high blood pressure? They want to give you drugs to kind of affect it, but not understanding what may be contributing to the root cause of that or the symptoms that develop from failed systems.
And that's why our healthcare system, the medical system, is broken, and why so many people end up, like kind of like your dad, they end up getting sometimes worse than better because they didn't get the best treatment because the system in and of itself is not maybe the best system.
Well, no, look, I was in that system for 20 years as a student. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I taught what's called patient-oriented problem solving to medical students. And then when I was on faculty at UT, we taught, you know, future physicians. That's what you, it's a teaching, it's a medical school, a teaching system. And for me, the epiphany was, look, we do a good job of teaching anatomy, physiology, biochemistry, and the basic kind of core sciences. But then the way the curriculum works is those next 2 years, you go off and you're doing clinical rotations and you're learning the practice of medicine, diagnosing ICD-10 codes. And then once you make a diagnosis, here's your kind of recipe for how you treat that. And if you venture outside of that, you're not practicing the standard of care and it could put your license at risk.
Yeah.
And then the, why is this? And then, you know, medicine is a business. It is a for-profit business. And as an entrepreneur and as a capitalist, you know, the number one rule of business is get a customer and keep that customer as long as you can. I mean, that's everybody's goal. And medicine is the best business out there. It's a $1 trillion industry. And once they get a customer, they put you on that hamster wheel and you never get off.
Yeah.
And it's never, how do we get you off of these drugs? It's, you're going to develop this symptom, I'm going to put you on another drug. That drug's going to cause a symptom, I'm going to put you on another drug. And now the lifetime value of that customer is the best business model in the world. And that's the problem.
Yeah, it is. And once people can, that's the first step in getting people, I think, to understand wellness is understanding where the system is broken and being aware of that and then moving forward to, and I think that first point that you said is so important, that all sickness comes from either toxins or a lack of nutritional deficiencies, right?
That's right.
That's right. Yeah, that's actually very helpful to tell people.
When you implement that philosophy, mm-hmm. we're never deficient in cholesterol-lowering medication. We're never deficient in synthetic compounds that inhibit biochemical reactions.
Yeah.
In fact, they're causing toxicity, and many of them lead to nutrient deficiencies.
Yes.
So it's contributing to the cycle of chronic disease, and that's why Americans are the sickest people on the planet, because we don't address the root cause.
Yeah. And then when you go into, like you said, our food, our water, what they've done to our soil, which is affecting our food, the stuff that's in our air, the stuff that's in our, I mean, our water is full of so many things. There's so many different ways we're being bombarded chemically. And honestly, most people aren't even aware of it. Our products that we use in our homes every single day. I mean, we are really bombarding our bodies with, and then we're not detoxing well because we don't even know how to detox.
No, look, we detox through breathing, mm-hmm. urination, defecation, and sweating. And nobody sweats anymore, right?
No one sweats. And most people have problems, you know, using the bathroom. Most people are constipated. I'm sorry. Most people are constipated. You know what I mean?
So, so you get toxins that build up that you can't get rid of.
Exactly. And people aren't even aware of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so this is why what you're doing with nitric oxide is so imperative. And what I love about it is because you're not creating something synthetic to treat a symptom, which is, you said that's, you said the word.
Pharmacology.
Pharmacology.
So pharmacology is the application of usually synthetic compounds that are targeted to a specific, what I call a symptomology of a disease.
Yeah. Right?
So, you know, the best example would be cholesterol-lowering medication. Right? Our body naturally produces cholesterol. Why? Because our body needs it.
Yeah.
And so when you develop a compound that inhibits the rate-limiting step of cholesterol synthesis, then that's pharmacology. It's targeted to specifically inhibit that biochemical reaction. And when you interrupt natural processes, when you interrupt nature and interfere with nature, there's always side effects.
Yeah, it's true.
And that's why most drugs aren't safe. There's always side effects.
But yours is different. What do you describe yours as?
Yeah, so what we do is restorative physiology, right? We don't use synthetic compounds. We don't manufacture and develop compounds that we can patent. I have a number of patents, but they're not on kind of novel structures of matter. But what we do is understand what goes wrong in people and then how do we fix it? And we focus specifically on nitric oxide. So number one, I had to understand how the human body makes nitric oxide. Number two, spent 20 years trying to understand what leads to a loss of nitric oxide production.
Mm-hmm.
What leads to the inability to naturally produce this very essential foundational molecule? And then once we had answers to those questions, then I thought, okay, now that I understand that, I can start to develop rational therapy. And so what we do is, again, how much nitric oxide are you making? We want to give back what's missing. The best example of this is vitamin D, right? Vitamin D is simple. You go get a blood draw, and if mm-hmm. your vitamin D is 20, you take vitamin D till your blood levels get 80.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an easy way to titrate it. The problem with nitric oxide is it's a gas.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, we can't pick it up in your blood in a clinical setting. And so we have to rely on symptoms and understanding how much nitric oxide a healthy person makes in 24 hours through the production pathways. So my goal was, let's give back what's missing and then let's fix the reason your body's lost the ability to produce it naturally. And that's what I focused on for the past 25 years.
So how did you get introduced to nitric oxide? We'll start there. And then I want to hear, what does nitric oxide do in the body and why it's so foundational for our health?
Well, I think I was a first-year student at LSU School of Medicine. A Nobel Prize had just been awarded. This was 1998 for the discovery of nitric oxide as a signaling molecule in the cardiovascular system. So obviously every year, and I believe it's August, the Nobel Prize is awarded, and then the prize is announced, and it's awarded, I think, in December.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy that won the Nobel Prize, there were three scientists, and one of them, Lou Ignaro, came to the medical school and gave a lecture and, you know, told about his story of discovery and journey and what led to a Nobel Prize. And he said to me, because Nathan, if we can figure out how to safely and effectively restore nitric oxide production in the human body, it'll change the world. And it'll change the management of disease, because there's not a single human disease where nitric oxide wouldn't be beneficial.
Oh, wow.
And I go, that's a pretty profound statement.
Yeah.
So fortunately, I trained under a pharmacologist, Martin Felish, who had been in the nitric oxide field for 20 years prior. And we developed analytical methods where we could detect nitric oxide gas in biological systems. And that now created for us what we called a fingerprint of NO biology in heart disease, diabetes, you know, transplant surgeries, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so then that allowed me to figure out how to make nitric oxide, right? Because nitric oxide is a gas, and once it's produced, it's gone in less than a second. So part of my kind of challenge was, when nitric oxide is produced, where does it go? What does it become? Mm-hmm. And then what does it do?
Yeah.
And then once we figured that out, then I thought, okay, well, now if I make nitric oxide and I can control and dictate the metabolic fate of nitric oxide, now I can develop safe and effective therapies. So there were multiple discoveries and kind of epiphanies along the way in my science career and discovery that allowed me to think a little bit differently. You know, there's a famous quote saying, research is to see what others are seeing and to think what no one else has thought.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always been my guiding principle, because there's a lot of noise out there.
Yeah.
So I can see what everyone else is seeing, but I had to think a little bit differently and think what no one else has thought. And when I said I could make a solid dose form of nitric oxide gas, people said it wasn't possible. You're trying to do the impossible. And you're going to kill people. And it's so I ignored the noise and kept my head down and focused on what I knew was important. And we've proven a lot of the disbelievers wrong.
I think that's so important too. And I think anyone that's ever changed history or has made an impact, they had to have that kind of mentality, because you're having to pioneer and pave a way that no one,
that's right.
And a lot of times people are like, you're crazy, you know? And if you care too much what people think, you're going to stop what you're doing and think about everything that's happened because you kept moving forward. What do you think was one of the things that propelled you?
The doubt. You know, I'm probably one of the hard-headedest people. But my parents tell me, everybody tells me this. But it was the doubt. You know, I believed in it. When people, the worst thing you can do is tell me no, because I'm going to be, you know, pretty motivated to prove you wrong. And when people started doubting what I was doing, told me it couldn't be done, there were
you
too many,
used it as like fuel to push you further.
It's fuel. It fueled the flame.
That's good, though. That's to parents, too. If you're watching this and if you have a kid like that, that's actually, you know, I think sometimes people are like, oh, and I'm like, no, that's
fear to fail. Fear of failure.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not fearful of failure. My fear is in fear of disappointment and fear of letting people down. But it's never been a fear of failure. And I think, you know, we have to train our kids to, if you haven't failed, you haven't tried, right? Failure is a very important lesson in life. But it's not, failure's not falling down. It's how many times you fall. It's how many times you get up.
Yep.
Right? And so for me, that was a driver. And the other thing, you know, I read a lot as a kid and even when I was going through school. And one of these, Schopenhauer, who was a German philosopher, and he said that when you establish a truth, and so these are fundamental truths, right? All truths go through three phases. First, they're ridiculed. Then secondly, they're violently opposed. And then third, they're revealed as being self-evident. So when I was going through these discoveries, I knew that these were fundamental truths. These were truths of physiology and how the human body works. So number one, I survived the ridicule. All my academic colleagues ridiculed me. There was violent opposition, complete violent opposition. I mean, from competitors, from big companies. I've been subject of multiple lawsuits trying to deplete me of my resources, trying to drain us financially, and keep what we're doing from getting out there and revealing the truth. But, you know, I've been ridiculed. I've been violently opposed. What's the next step? It's self-evident.
Yeah.
And that's where we're entering this third phase of these truths that we've discovered.
Yeah. And people are starting to see the benefits. I mean, and God has to be behind it too. Because I think too, when someone, it's like, if you're a David and you're facing a Goliath, only God can like, you know,
that's
sustain
right. He's
you.
He's my slingshot.
Yeah, that's right. That's awesome. That's so cool. I love that. I'm always inspired. And it's inspiring to me to hear stories of people who persevere. And I think other people, they'll persevere, but then they allow themselves to get intimidated. And I was talking to my husband this morning about that story in the Bible where he tells his people to go into the promised land and they go, well, there's giants in there, you know? And so a whole generation weren't able to enter until only Joshua and Caleb, they're the only two that said, we can do this, God's on our side. So you have to have that mentality that if God is for us, who can be against us?
Now for sure. Look, there hasn't been a day I didn't wake up in prayer and gratitude. And, you know, even the dimmest of times and the darkest of times and the slimmest times financially with no resources and really betting the farm, being everything we had on this dream and this kind of vision I had. And then to just, if it's meant to be, you know, God, your will be done, not mine.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's guided me, it's given me direction and given me really confidence to know that what we're doing is the right thing. Because what I recognized early on is the benefit and the power of nitric oxide. You know, treating my dad's non-healing wounds, getting him off prescription medication, blood pressure medicine. You know, this pediatric patient we published on at Texas Children's Hospital in 2011, saving his life when all prescription medication failed him. He was in a hypertensive crisis, and we just gave him our nitric oxide lozenge and saved his life, improved his cognition, reversed his heart disease, reversed his kidney disease.
That's amazing.
And then now, every day when I wake up, I've got hundreds of text, emails, and voicemails of, you've saved my life, thank you. And I mean, there's nothing more gratifying than being involved in changing someone's life. And certainly it's that if you've changed one person's life, you've changed the world, and you've changed their world for sure.
That's so
amazing. That's my guiding light, my principle, but you know, it's all, you know, it's certainly a divine intervention, because when I look at where I am, where I've been, mm-hmm. and perhaps even where I'm going, it's all, I couldn't have scripted this.
No.
Certainly have been God leading me along the way.
Someone's guiding me.
Teaching me a lot of lessons along the way too.
I know. And it's always in the hardest things. Usually the best lessons are learned. So nitric oxide, what is it? Why is it important?
Well, it's what we call a signaling molecule. So it's how cells in the body communicate with one another. And the best example is in the lining of the blood vessel. Mm-hmm. So there these this single layer of cells in the blood vessel called endothelial cells produce nitric oxide. It diffuses into the smooth muscle and it causes smooth muscle relaxation and blood vessels dilate. So now we're improving blood flow and tissue oxygenation. But it actually controls how oxygen is delivered on the hemoglobin molecule. It regulates the uptake and delivery of oxygen. But it's much more than a vasodilator. It mobilizes our stem cells. It activates our mitochondria so that we can improve energy production at the cellular level.
That's major.
It prevents our telomeres, the ends of our chromosomes, from getting shorter, so it extends lifespan. What else does it do? It improves performance, improves cognition. You know, we talk about performance. We talk about athletic performance. You know, it's a great ergogenic aid in improving performance. It's a cognitive performance booster. It improves blood flow to the brain, improves glucose uptake so we can recall memory and sharper mind, and it improves sexual performance. You know, it's all about improving blood flow and optimizing human performance.
Yeah, and I know from just my own little bit of research and study that, I mean, the mitochondria of our cells, the powerhouse of our cells, if we can improve that, that impacts our health on a huge scale. Just
no, look,
that one thing.
Yeah, it is so every chronic disease is associated with lower numbers of mitochondria per cell. Mm-hmm. And what mitochondria are there, they're inefficient, right? So they go from an efficiency of, say, 36 miles to gallon to 4 miles per gallon or 2 miles per gallon. So what nitric oxide does is it recouples the electron transport chain, so it improves the efficiency of energy production within the cell. And more importantly, it induces mitochondrial biogenesis. So if you make sufficient nitric oxide, it tells that cell, I need to make more mitochondria. Mm-hmm. So you have more mitochondria generating more energy more efficiently with even less oxygen. So if you can't make mitochondria, they become uncoupled. You have less mitochondria per cell, and it sets the stage for chronic disease. So we see it. Most athletes, professional athletes, use our nitric oxide product technology.
Because they need to be functioning on an even higher level performance-wise.
Absolutely.
With their bodies. So why is there a nitric oxide deficiency in our world today?
It's basically everything we do on a daily basis, from the foods we eat to the drug therapy we take to the oral hygienic practices that we employ all around us. So, you know, we and others have discovered that there's bacteria that live in the crypts of the tongue and the mouth that are responsible mm-hmm. for the production of nitric oxide. So anything that destroys the microbiome.
So it's connected to the microbiome as well, the nitric oxide?
Absolutely. So there are bacteria that respire on nitrogen and nitrate, and then they reduce nitrate to nitrite. We swallow it, and when it reaches the environment of our stomach, it produces nitric oxide gas, as long as there's sufficient stomach acid production. So all of this is dependent upon good oral hygiene and a good oral microbiome. And then when you think about, okay, what's disrupting this? Fluoride.
There's
fluoride
in
most toothpaste.
And still most dentists use it.
And fluoride rinses. And there's in 73% of the municipalities in the U.S., there's fluoride in the drinking water.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just the drinking water. It's the water you're bathing in, you're cooking in, you're drinking. And so fluoride is an antiseptic. It's put in the water to kill the bacteria in the pipes. So it kills the bacteria in our pipes, all right?
Oh,
in our gut, in our mouth. There's a microbiome on our skin. It's killing the good bacteria on the skin, causing acne, fungal overgrowth. Dermatitis. So we have to support the microbiome and not destroy it. So fluoride is a bad actor, and we have to get rid of it. I think we're on the right path to getting rid of fluoride. Mm-hmm. And it lowers IQ in kids by as much as 7 points.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And then the other thing is antiseptic mouthwash. 2 out of 3 Americans wake up every morning and use a mouthwash, killing the entire microbiome. And not coincidentally, 2 out of 3 Americans have an unsafe elevation in blood pressure. So we've done controlled studies where we take people with normal blood pressure and we just give them mouthwash for 7 days and we see their blood pressure go up. Just by killing the microbiome, we can see an increase in blood pressure. Now think about the global impact of this high blood pressure is the number one driver for the number one killer of men and women, cardiovascular disease. And 50% of the people who take prescription medications to manage your blood pressure don't respond with better blood pressure. We call that resistant hypertension.
Really?
They're resistant to therapy.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I knew that the number one prescription drug that people take is connected to blood pressure. That's right, right?
Well, the number one is a cholesterol-lowering medication.
Okay.
But no, these drugs are resistant. These people are resistant to drug therapy because it's the wrong target. The drugs that are treated for hypertension are usually ACE inhibitors, which are angiotensin-converting enzyme, ARBs, angiotensin receptor blockers, calcium channel blockers, or diuretics to mobilize fluid, or worst case, a beta blocker to pace the heart. But yet people don't respond with better blood pressure because what we're finding is their hypertension is a symptom of oral dysbiosis and lack of nitric oxide.
Wow.
So now you have a conversation with the patient physician and go, okay, you're resistant to ACE inhibitors, ARBs, calcium channel blockers. Do you use fluoride in your toothpaste? Yes. Do you use mouthwash? Yes. Okay, stop using mouthwash. Get rid of fluoride in your toothpaste. Come back 30 days later and let's check your blood pressure. And remarkably, their blood pressure comes down. So if we stop killing the nitric oxide producing bacteria in the mouth and we support it, we repopulate and restore these flora, these bacteria, then our blood pressure can become normal. And on a global scale, if we can manage blood pressure, because every 1 millimeter mercury of increase in blood pressure increases your risk of cardiovascular disease by 1%.
Wow.
So if you've got a blood pressure of 140 over 90, you have a 20% greater risk of, or 20% greater risk of developing cardiovascular disease. So this is the target. The microbiome is the target. And that's what we're focused on in restoring the production, natural production of nitric oxide.
And you're working on a mouthwash, am I correct?
We just launched a toothpaste because I've struggled for years. Number one, there's some fluoride-free toothpaste out there that I've been using.
Yeah.
But there are other things in there that I didn't like, but it's kind of it's the best out there. So I thought, okay, now that we understand the ecology of the oral microbiome, I'm going to develop a toothpaste, number one, that's free of fluoride. But number two, remineralizes the teeth.
Yes, because that's the other thing.
And then supports the healthy microbiome. And so that was probably a 5-year project. We launched that toothpaste a couple of months ago, but
it's
incredible. We're starting to see people's blood pressure come down just by switching to our our toothpaste. And then we're also launching a microbiome-specific mouth rinse. So again, one that'll kill the pathogenic bacteria, but supports the normal non-pathogenic commensal bacteria.
Oh,
so again, targeting the microbiome, supporting the microbiome. It'll be a game changer.
Y'all, I'm so excited for this because I geek out over all this stuff, and this is like the kind of products that I've been looking for. So I am so excited because yes, a lot of people understand kind of about how important the microbiome in our gut is, but people don't understand the microbiome in the mouth and how—
Or on our skin. I mean,
yeah,
people do have poor skin health and, you know, people taking multiple baths a day with antiseptic soaps and rinsing off the bacteria and— You know, it's causing dysbiosis. And then they develop body odor. Then they use antiperspirant deodorants, which contain aluminum and toxins. And it's just this vicious cycle.
Oh, no. I knew the aluminum was bad for your body because it's a toxin, but it also bad for the bacteria.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Are you going to make a deodorant?
We're working on that because here's the problem.
Thank God. Because that's
smell,
another one.
Smell occurs, whether it's bad breath, bad armpits, mm-hmm. or smelly poop.
Yeah.
It's all from the bacteria. It's dysbiosis.
Yeah.
So if your armpits smell, it means you've got a bacterial problem. You've got an imbalance and dysbiosis. If your breath stinks, you've got dysbiosis. So what we try to do, rather than killing everything and throwing an atomic bomb in there, let's selectively kill the odor-causing, the pathogenic bacteria, and let's support the non-pathogenic commensals. I haven't worn deodorant in more than 20 years, but yet I don't have body odor. I don't put those on me because I support my microbiome. I don't destroy it.
What all do you do for your microbiome?
Well, typically, number one, I don't use any toxins, so I don't use any lotions or any antiperspirant or deodorant. And I have a home filtration system, so I'm not making my body antiseptic with fluoride whether I bathe in or drink or cook in. But I take nitric oxide and I try to eat a good, clean diet. And I'm exposed to sunlight at least 20 to 30 minutes a day, full body exposure. And that helps kind of repopulate and create balance in the microbiome.
Really? I didn't know I know how important sunlight exposure is, but I didn't know about the connection to your microbiome.
Oh, yeah.
Do you try to do it at a certain time of day?
First sunlight in the morning.
That's what everyone says. They say it's the best sunlight.
No, it is. It completely resets your circadian rhythm. So what I do when I wake up, you know, usually an hour before the sun comes up. I sit in a sauna for 30 minutes in 170 degrees. And there I'm doing my prayers. I open my Halo app and I give gratitude. I pray. And really that's how I start my day, with gratitude. And just, I have a every day I wake up, I have a plan.
It's genius.
The plan is, number one, how do I be better than I was yesterday? And then how am I going to execute this strategy hour by hour? Mm-hmm. And that gets my mind mentally prepared for the day. And then after 30 minutes of sauna, I'll typically a couple days a week go do a cold plunge, get in an ice bath for 3 minutes. And then I'll go sit out in my front yard and watch the sun come up and get that first sunlight, usually 20 or 30 minutes.
And you look into the...
Look into the sun.
Because there's something about that too.
Yeah, it resets your circadian rhythm. It's activating a lot of pathways in the eye that gets the eye ready and receptive for sun. Worst thing you could do is wear sunglasses. And I used to wear sunglasses all the time.
Oh, me too.
It affected my sleep pattern. I was a poor sleeper, and you can't heal without proper sleep.
That's crazy. And then the screens at night, that's the other thing that messes with your circadian rhythm.
Yeah, so at night when the sun goes down, I wear the blue blocker glasses.
I need to get some of those.
Artificial light.
But they're not all the equal, right? Some are better than others.
Look, it's like any product out there. You've got some really good brands that actually do stuff, and you've got these wannabe companies who are just selling you a bill of goods.
And there's other nitric... Is there other nitric oxide people?
No, look, there's hundreds of companies out there selling hundreds of so-called nitric oxide products, and that's my greatest challenge.
Yeah.
Every day when I wake up is, how do we differentiate what we do from all these other wannabes out there? Because what I've done is spent 25 years in the trenches, in the research lab, understanding the biochemistry and enzymology to where I have an understanding where I can make products. All these other companies out there are kind of, you know, following the fad.
Yeah.
They're creating a market for it, and they want to profit off those that growing market. So there's hundreds of products out there, but the problem is most of them don't work. And I test these products. I have a nitric oxide analyzer. I can tell you if it's working or not. And none of them work.
Yeah.
They give your body precursors and substrates and hoping your body can convert it. But the reason people are nitric oxide deficient is the endogenous systems for utilizing that is broken. So you just make expensive urine.
And just peeing it out.
Just peeing it out, yeah. And so what I try to do is, number one, educate and inform on the science of nitric oxide.
Yeah.
Hopefully build trust, because I've been there. I understand the science. And that what I do, we validate our products. We show you they work. You can see them working right before your eyes. And, you know, other companies, competitive companies, don't like that. And when I show the truth and show their products don't work, I get sued.
Oh, no.
Or they complain to organizers at medical meetings that I can't test their products anymore because it reveals the truth that the products are not effective and really fraudulent. It's at the end of the day, it's fraud.
Ugh. Well, I'm glad we're out here spreading the truth. Another thing that you said that takes out nitric oxide, depletes us, is sugar. Can you talk about that?
Sugar. Sugar is the poison. It's the toxin. It's the
enemy. What everyone says. You're like, I've heard this from so many guests, and I'm like, I don't know who invented this and put it in all of our stuff, because it's in everything.
Well, it's addictive. I mean, it's more, some people say it's more addictive than cocaine. So it gets people, again, it's a great financial model because it gets people hooked on a product.
And depleted.
And depleted, and makes you, so if you're on a high sugar diet, you're going to be dependent upon pharmaceuticals. And now big ag, big pharma, big food is, you know, it's a collusion to share in the profits.
No, I know. And it makes food more addictive. So you eat
more,
you get more sick. One of the biggest things I saw, so I've actually cut down sugar as much as possible. I really, like, if anything has cane sugar, which, y'all, it's like in everything. Like, I don't think people realize.
It's hard to avoid.
Like, people think it's just like sweets. It's in like drinks. It's in sauces. It's in, I mean, almost any kind of processed food. That's why
salad dressings.
Yeah, it has sugar. And if you go out to eat, it's because it's a cheap way to make food more, you know, addictive and like for people to eat. But all that being said, I majorly cut down on it. And one of the first things I saw is how much better my immune system was. And I don't get sick. I was getting sick all the time because I have little kids. And I was like, I can't be sick. That's one of my biggest motivators to stay away from it. And it causes inflammation. So it makes me feel bad. If I start to eat sugar, I notice almost in like a couple days, I will feel bad. because my body's like freaking out. It's making all this inflammation.
Well, we can explain that mechanistically because here's what sugar does. If you eat sugar, eat foods that are converted to sugar in the body, it leads to an increase in blood sugar or fasting glucose. So glucose, as the name implies, is glue. It's sticky, right? If you spill a soda water on the tabletop, come back the next day, it's sticky.
Yeah.
Well, it creates stickiness inside the body, inside the lining of the blood vessels, where blood cells start sticking together. You lose the ability to deliver oxygen because it sticks to hemoglobin and locks it in a conformational state where it can't deliver oxygen. And then it sticks to the enzyme that makes nitric oxide. You become nitric oxide deficient. And then if you eat a lot of sugar, it changes the pH in your mouth. It drops the pH. Your salivary pH, your saliva becomes very acidic. And now that creates an environment for a completely different type of bacteria to populate.
Wow.
And it's the caries-causing bacteria. It's the gingival plaque, the bacteria that causes gum disease, gingivitis. So you have to get rid of sugar. Then the other big thing is mouth breathers.
Yep.
You know, the mouth is not for breathing, it's for speaking. So people who sleep with their mouth open, again, you're fully oxygenating that oral cavity.
All night long.
All night long. You're changing the pH of your saliva. You got complete dysbiosis. And your breath smells like a gut wagon when you wake up in the morning because of the dysbiosis.
And you know what's awful about that? And I'll just say this really quick and we'll get back on nitric oxide, but kind of goes back to how it all works together. People usually did not have an issue with mouth breathing, but because Weston Price, he studied this, the dentist, that if he went to when the Industrial Revolution, because he's no longer alive, people were having a lot of teeth issues. He went to indigenous communities that ate a whole foods diet of foods rich in meat and whole foods. They weren't eating processed and they had no issues. And when you would look at them, it's because their jaws fully developed. There is space for their teeth. Well, what is a huge industry? Everyone needs, me including, needed braces.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't room in my mouth. So a lot of people are mouth breathing and also tongue ties, lip ties, but I won't get into that. I'm just passionate about this. A lot of people are mouth breathing because there is not enough space. And so that's a whole other topic. But people can mouth tape at night and you can work with an airway specialist.
I always recommend an airway specialist before you go to tape in your mouth because if you've got an obstructive airway,
you'll choke yourself.
Last thing you want to do is tape your mouth, right? It's your only source
of oxygen. I forgot about that.
Don't experiment with that at all.
No, you're right. So you need to go to an airway specialist. And there is stuff that you can do as an adult. Okay, so that's like a life-changing thing, y'all. And if you have little kids, you can really change.
No, I think as a kid, if your kid is sleeping with their mouth open, mm-hmm. you must go see a pediatric airway specialist because they have a problem. And it develops behavioral issues. It develops a lot of psychological issues. You have to get them
anxiety
fully oxygenated.
Yes, because they're not breathing
properly.
They're
not breathing. They're not being fully oxygenated.
ADHD. And so there's a lot of kids that are being misdiagnosed. Because
it's an airway problem.
Yeah.
And they want to medicate these kids.
And they want to take your adenoids and your tonsils out because they expand because you're breathing with your mouth. So there's, this is what's so fascinating.
Again, it's not addressing the root cause.
Yep. And it's a huge problem in today's society. But sugar. And it's so interesting. I had Dr. Amen on, who's a brain doctor.
Yeah.
And he literally said, out of all the health stuff, he was like, I'm paying attention to my mouth health.
The SPECT scans of the brain, and he can see the effects of sugar and different, and alcohol and cocaine and marijuana.
In your mouth.
And dysbiosis in your mouth.
Yeah. He says that because of the way it's connected. He said he said that he saw in his patients the connection between mouth health and brain health. And so he says, and he also wears a glucose monitor. So after I heard you talking about that, I was like, I kind of want to get one because you won't really, that's what he said. He's like, you won't really know what's spiking
you.
You got to
know how your body responds.
Exactly. Because a lot of disease also is coming from insulin resistance. Most people are insulin resistant and they don't know it. Because
exactly
people
right.
just think, if you have diabetes, but it can come. Even people who are not overweight, even though most people in America are overweight now, which is kind of crazy. That's another epidemic.
Yeah.
But you can have insulin resistance and not even know it.
Well, what we found, we published this in 2011, insulin resistance is a symptom of nitric oxide deficiency. So if the cell can't make nitric oxide, insulin can't do its job and signal to bring glucose into the cell and clear it from the circulation.
Really?
So the broken system, insulin resistant, you become resistant to insulin because the cell can't make nitric oxide.
That is huge.
So when the cell makes nitric oxide, it activates a protein called GLUT4, which tells it to go to the membrane, bring glucose, clear it from the circulation, and that's how we clear glucose after a meal. And that's what keeps you from getting the glucose spike. And as long as insulin is, your body, your cells are sensitive to it, then insulin spikes, but it goes down. Glucose spikes, but it comes down. Mm-hmm. And that's how we regulate blood sugar. But if you can't make nitric oxide, you can't get glucose into the cell, then it tells your pancreas, hey, I need more insulin. Push more insulin. Then you get hyperinsulinemia, hyperglycemia. And that's the cascade of inflammation that leads to diabetic neuropathy, macular degeneration, heart attack, stroke, poor healing wounds. That explains everything about diabetes.
Because diabetes affects blood flow, right? That's why people, like, they can have problems with their...
Neuropathy, the small fibers, whether it's, small fiber disease or large fiber disease, those nerves have to have blood vessel supply, right? And so when you're diabetic, you have microvascular dysfunction. You can't make nitric oxide, so those nerve fibers are no longer getting perfused. There's no sodium, there's no potassium. You can't elicit an action potential and develop neuropathy.
So what's so interesting about this conversation is basically finding out that nitric oxide helps the body, the cells, in a lot of different ways.
Now, I tell people it's foundational. It's an essential molecule. It's not a panacea. It's not an end-all, be-all, cure-all. But here's what we do know, that your body cannot and will not heal or become optimized without adequate nitric oxide. There may be other things that are contributing to your disease, but at the end of the day, if you've got chronic disease, you have nitric oxide deficiency. Let's first restore the production of nitric oxide. Then let's focus on what nutrients are you deficient in? Yeah. What toxins are you exposed to? Fix that, and then your body heals itself.
That's so good. What I love about what you've developed, too, is that you've had patients who are on various prescription drugs take this, and it's had no negative, because a lot of times there's that risk. If I take this, it's going to interfere with my other prescriptions. So it shows really how safe it is. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, look, we have a long history of safety because, number one, I know how much nitric oxide the human body makes, and I want to give that back. So I'm never giving more than what the body's usually exposed to. But then what we did know prior to 4 years ago was, what about people that are on different medications, polypharmacy? Mm-hmm. And during our COVID drug study, we had our nitric oxide releasing lozenge in a phase 3 clinical trial for COVID, and found that in some of these patients were on 20 different medications. When we did a census of what the medications they were taking, I mean, people are over-medicated.
Yeah.
So the point is that even when we gave our lozenge on top of their 20 different medications, there was no interactions with any of the medications. There was no unsafe drop in blood pressure. In fact, there was no safety signal whatsoever. So we know that our drug technology and our product delivery is extremely safe, that doesn't interact with medications and lead to an unsafe drop in blood pressure. So that's number one. First, do no harm. I mean, safety is the utmost number one priority.
Yep.
And then number two, is it effective? Well, we know, and we've had conversations, and many physicians use this in their patients and start having for the first time a conversation of, okay, we've had you on these blood pressure medicines for 20 years. Now it seems like your blood pressure is better managed. Let's back off those, and let's see if we can start weaning you off of prescription medication. And lo and behold, again, we focus on the target, we focus on the microbiome, we eliminate toxins, we replete nutrients, and there's no need for prescription medication.
That's amazing. That is so amazing. Have you noticed, I don't even know, because I know with pregnant people, women don't ever want to do anything, but I know that preeclampsia is a massive issue in pregnancy, and that's a blood pressure problem.
Yeah, so my wife took our product during all the pregnancies, early forms of it. And then early on, we did a study at Memorial Hermann or Ben Taub in high-risk pregnancies and specifically preeclampsia. And the problem with preeclampsia is you develop really high blood pressure.
Yeah, and then it causes a bunch of problems.
Well, the only treatment is premature delivery.
Yeah, which is awful.
Because if you treat with blood pressure medicines, a lot of times it'll cause increase in intracranial pressures and the women will go into seizures. So you have to be very careful on how you treat them.
Yeah.
So we took, I think it was 4 to 5 preeclamptic patients that were admitted. We dosed them with our lozenge. It normalized their blood pressure. It didn't cause an increase in intracranial pressures. We did ultrasound of the fetus, and it was very well tolerated. And in some of those patients, we could extend gestation for 7 or 10 days. And think about that.
That's huge.
I mean, from a developing baby in a premature baby that's underdeveloped, the risk,
yes,
you know, of even infant mortality, you know, even mother mortality is still extremely high. So if we can extend gestation, manage their blood pressure, then both mother and baby are going to be better for it. Oh. And it was an amazing finding. We never followed up on it because that's, again, a drug study that's very expensive and long-term. But
yeah,
theoretically, I mean, practically, it works. And I still tell people, if you have preeclampsia or gestational diabetes, the lozenge is completely safe.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about gestational diabetes. Yeah, preeclampsia, I mean, just because, you know, I've had my own babies, you're always talking to women. A lot of women have that, and it causes a lot of complications. And I've even known people that had complications with it after giving birth. I mean, where their blood pressure, you know, they had to be admitted to a hospital right after giving birth. And so if something could help mitigate that, this is amazing. I love that.
Yeah, we've done a lot of work with pregnancy and even nursing, you know, analyzing breast milk. Mm-hmm. And babies are getting a really rich source of nitric oxide through breast milk that's not present in formula.
That's so cool.
So that 2011 paper we published, we argued that the health benefits conferred through breastfeeding is partly dependent upon nitric oxide. It's not just the passage of the immunoglobulins. But, you know, babies who are breastfed for at least 6 months have lower incidence of diabetes, high blood pressure, autoimmune disease later in life. And we argue that it's partially a nitric oxide problem. Yep. And even when my last son was born, I collected the embryonic fluid during delivery. We were in there, and when the water broke, I go, I got to have some of that. And we took it to the lab, and we analyzed it. But these babies during 9 months of gestation are bathed in a really nitric oxide rich environment.
Really? That is so.
Then when you have vaginally delivered babies, you're getting inoculated, mm-hmm, right through the vaginal canal. Where cesarean delivery, they lack that inoculation. And we know that vaginally delivered babies have better immune systems than cesarean. So we argued again that there's a critical role for inoculation of those good bacteria, that if we can restore that and recapitulate that even through cesarean deliveries, then the baby will be healthier for it and breastfeeding.
They're just starting to, I just saw where they're doing studies now on cesarean babies. And I mean, in America, we have way too high of a number of women getting C-sections. And what breaks my heart is I know women, and I've seen women's stories where they don't know the risks involved. I mean, it's one thing to go into birth and need a C-section. It's another thing to just choose to get a C-section. Yep. And doctors aren't telling them all the things their babies are missing out on. And now they're doing research. And I mean, that passage of the baby through, I think one, they call it like the canal of life. And it's that bacteria is setting up their microbiome for the rest of their life. And then that breastfeeding also contributes to that microbiome for the rest of their life. And they did a study on babies, and a lot of them were deficient in, I can't say the bacteria name, it's like B. infantis.
Bifidobacterium.
Yes. Yep. It's a very essential bacteria. And then on top of that, I mean, overprescription of antibiotics. So to be mindful of the microbiome and to see how this can help play a role in helping support that is massive.
Yeah, and we think it's a game changer. I mean, we live in this, you know, germophobic society where, you know, I still get on a plane every week and they're giving me the antibacterial antiseptic cloths and and I still sit next to people who are wiping everything down and bathe 2 or 3 times a day with antibacterial soaps, antibacterial mouthwash and fluoride toothpaste, and they're sick. They're unhealthy.
Yeah.
And we have to, you know, I like to use nature as an example. And I have a ranch and just 3 hours south of here and have horses and dogs. Oh, and wow. So I noticed if you bathe your horse or bathe your dog, what do? They go roll in the dirt.
Yeah.
Right? So they're re-inoculated. They're a lot smarter than we are because they know they have to re-inoculate. And those ammonia oxidizing bacteria that are found in the soil, when we sweat, we secrete ammonia. There's ammonia oxidizing bacteria that produce nitric oxide. And so it's an ecology of nitric oxide producing systems based on the bacteria that live in our body and on our body. And so kids need to get out there and eat some dirt, roll around in some dirt, and not have this germophobic mindset of many parents.
Yeah, yeah. And I think even with COVID, people got even worse about all of that stuff. And
everything we were doing during COVID was counterintuitive.
Yeah.
You know, antibiotics for a viral infection, by the way. Antiseptic mouthwash, using antacids. Everything we were doing,
social hand sanitizer. They were doing that at my church. They were forcing the kids, and I was knowing what I know, I was like, no.
Yeah, and wearing masks and breathing in your own carbon dioxide and hypoxic. And I mean, looking back, it's criminal. There's no other word for it. It's criminal.
And you were, during COVID, treating patients with nitric oxide, and you were seeing an improvement, but then you had pushback. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, we had a drug as an early therapeutic, because the challenge early on during COVID was, how do we develop a safe and effective early treatment to keep people out of the hospital? Because early on, the ERs and the hospitals were overrun with people, and they couldn't manage it, and people were dying in the streets all over the world.
Yep.
So we were fast-tracked through FDA, and we had a drug called Nitrivir that we were treating for COVID patients. And we would try to find them within 72 hours of diagnosis or onset of symptoms and treat them with nitric oxide, because what we realized early on was that people that were getting sick and dying from COVID were the people who could not make nitric oxide. The elderly, the hypertensive, the diabetics, previous heart attack, African Americans, for example. So we thought, if we can give them nitric oxide early on, we can prevent the virus from replicating, we can mitigate the vascular inflammation that we were seeing with COVID, and we could protect against the loss of blood oxygen saturation, the hypoxia that allowed for the admission in the hospitals and the intensive care unit. So within the first 100 patients, we'd already seen a statistically significant difference between the group. We assumed that the people were getting better on the active drug and not the placebo. And so we petitioned the FDA to give us emergency use authorization, because it was, number one, safe, but number two, it seemed to be making patients better and keeping them out of the hospital. And this was after the Biden administration had taken over the White House, and the FDA advised us to continue the clinical trial to the end. And then obviously COVID changed and people weren't getting sick and going to the hospital, so we had to abort the clinical trial. But looking back, they were never going to approve our drug, because had they had a safe and effective drug for therapy or for COVID on the market, they could have never mandated the vaccines. And at that point in time, they were hell-bent on pushing for vaccine mandates, getting everybody in the world vaccinated. And if we had a safe and effective nitric oxide drug on the market, then they could have never mandated the vaccines.
So how did they shut you down?
Told us to complete the clinical trial, keep enrolling patients, and we had to enroll 840 patients to hit our primary endpoint based on the power analysis. But,
so they
later during COVID,
you along to where it was,
yeah, because
hard.
People weren't getting sick and going to the hospital anymore, right?
Yeah.
It was a 3-year-old disease. The fear had kind of waned. People were realizing it was probably a contrived, man-made phenomenon.
Yeah.
So there was less fear and less people going to the hospital. And if you didn't complete our study, if you weren't hospitalized or admitted to the ICU or you died. So
and
we had to abort the study.
Too. No,
it's very expensive to conduct large-scale drug studies.
Yeah, that's
so
crazy.
We stopped and we tabled it for the next respiratory virus outbreak. We know we've got a safe drug product, and we just keep it on the shelf till the next one, and then we'll deploy it again.
How does it help fight a virus?
Well, we've known for probably 20 years now that nitric oxide actually prevents a virus from replicating. And this was in SARS-CoV-1, coronavirus, not SARS-CoV-2, which was corona. But data out of I believe it was Sweden or Switzerland, showed in 2005 that nitric oxide prevents the virus from replicating. So in terms of respiratory, the normal immune response to viruses, when we're exposed to a virus, whether it's RSV, influenza, coronavirus, our body recognizes that. And it goes, I'm being attacked. I got to mobilize an immune response. The immune cells go there, the site of attachment, generate a lot of nitric oxide for a short period of time and prevent the virus from replicating.
Mm.
So think about it in those at risk. That those who can't make nitric oxide, number one, they've got an upregulation of ACE2 receptor where the coronavirus, the spike protein, binds to.
Mm-hmm.
So there's more attachment sites for the virus to enter and to penetrate the cell. So that's nitric oxide deficiency. They're more susceptible to viral infections because of that upregulation of certain receptors that viruses bind to. So in people who can't make nitric oxide, they got more target, more entries of entry or more ports of entry into the cell by the virus, and then you can't mobilize an immune response. And so by that time, the virus has taken over in the cell. It's rapidly replicating.
Mm-hmm.
It's propagating throughout the body, releasing the spike protein, causing vascular inflammation, causing platelets to aggregate, microclots. Break them down, elevation in D-dimers. There's your long COVID patient, and there's your systemic disease from a respiratory infection.
Has this helped people with long COVID?
Absolutely.
That's huge.
Yeah, because the problem is, look, you've got the vascular inflammation. Mm-hmm. Several of my patents are on a method of reducing vascular inflammation. So nitric oxide lowers the inflammation, downregulates the ACE2 receptors, so there's less target for the spike protein to bind to, prevents platelets from becoming activated, prevents clot formation.
That's
huge. Important. I mean, people died from heart attack, stroke, from these massive clots.
Yep.
Based on autopsy reports.
Yep. There was a huge uptake in people getting heart problems. I mean, tons of people. Have you seen any improvement with cancer with nitric oxide?
You know, there's two camps out there in cancer. Cancer is a pretty complex disease. To me, cancer is a metabolic disease. Mm. Cancer only grows in a low oxygen, low pH, low voltage environment. And we call that the Warburg effect. You know, Otto Warburg won a Nobel Prize in, I think, the 1930s for the discovery that cancer is a metabolic disease, aerobic fermentation, uncoupled electron transport chain, and that creates an environment for cancer cells to rapidly proliferate and grow and form a primary tumor. So the thought process is, in a primary tumor environment, you never want to give what's called a pro-angiogenic factor, meaning a molecule that can induce vasculogenesis, angiogenesis. Because it was thought that you could grow new blood vessels to that hypoxic tumor and induce metastatic disease.
Mm-hmm.
That's one camp. My camp is that because a primary tumor is low oxygen, low pH, low voltage, nitric oxide is the antidote to that, right? What does nitric oxide do? Dilates the blood vessels, oxygenates the tissue, recouples the electron transport chain.
Yeah.
It's a free radical, so it donates an electron. It increases the voltage in that environment. So everything that nitric oxide is and does is anti-cancer.
Wow.
But you have to address why that primary tumor grew in the first place. Mm-hmm. There's a whole other discussion on that. But treating the cancer and oxygenating hypoxic primary tumor, I think, is the best medicine.
That's amazing. Well, I'm taking this product. This has been such an incredible conversation. Thank you so much for your work and your dedication. Thank you for not giving up when things were difficult. And keep going and keep making products and come back and we can talk about more things.
Thank you, Rebecca. It's been a great pleasure.
It's been awesome. Thank you so much, doctor.